further de-dollarization. Vladimir Kolichekov, Russia's deputy finance minister, was quoted as saying, "If the question is whether the euro will be reset, then it will definitely be reset this year. The fund will consist of up to 60% yuan and no more than 40% gold, and Russia may add rubles to the sovereign wealth fund." Previously, the yuan accounted for 30%, while gold accounted for 20%, according to Russian media. As of February 1, 2023, the NWF held 10.46 billion euros, 307.44 billion yuan, 551.27 tons of gold, and 530.1 million rubles in its accounts, according to a report by the Russian Ministry of Finance. Cutting the euro out of the NWF is in essence a continuation of Russia's earlier systematic de-dollarization policy. Considering that there are few options in the global currency market for benchmarking the US dollar system based on fintech, economic strength, and trade skill, the yuan system is objectively the best solution for the de-dollarization of Russia and other countries. Chen Jia, an independent analyst on international strategy, told the Global Times recently. This could be seen from the expanded yuan trading across the Moscow bourse after Western countries imposed sanctions on Russian financial institutions in 2022. Yuan accounted for 48% of foreign exchange trading on the Moscow exchange in November 2022, up from 0.2% at the start of the year. RT also wrote in this regard, famed writer and economist Robert Kiyosaki has warned investors that the stock markets are about to crash and the US economy is heading into a depression. According to the Rich Dad Poor Dad co-author, this will be fueled by the fact that the US Federal Reserve will print billions in fake money. Giant crash is coming. Depression possible, Kiyosaki tweeted recently. He explained that this will be because faith in the US dollar, fake money, will be destroyed. This is not the first time Kiyosaki has tweeted about an approaching market crash. He has made several similar warnings, tweeting that everything will crash, including the prices of gold, silver, and Bitcoin. This has caused some skepticism regarding his predictions. Recently, Kiyosaki predicted an impending collapse of the financial markets, which could happen, he said, as early as this week. Analysts noted that he probably attributed the worsening of market conditions to US inflation data, which is due on February 14th. Kiyosaki urged people not to panic and to increase their exposure to strong assets. Meanwhile, RT in a separate article wrote, Moscow and Tehran intend to further increase the share of their national currencies in mutual settlements, Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Andrei Rudenko said recently, adding that the sides have been strengthening cooperation in the banking sector. We will continue to work with Iran, stimulating trade operations in national currencies. In 2021, the share of settlements in national currencies exceeded 60%. The positive trend continued last year, Rudenko told Interfax News Agency. He noted that interaction with Iran through central banks and credit institutions has been also actively developing. At the end of January, the creation of a direct communication channel between Russian and Iranian banks was fixed on paper through the synchronization of national financial messaging systems, which are the SPFS and SEPAM, the diplomat said. The move would allow cross-border transactions without using the Western financial messaging system, SWIFT. Cooperation between Iran and Russia accelerated last year amid Western sanctions on the two countries. Throughout 2022, the countries reached a number of agreements expanding cooperation, from barter supply deals for Iranian turbines, spare parts, and aircraft equipment, to contracts for the joint construction of natural gas pipelines. Trade between Tehran and Moscow surged by 15% last year, reaching $4.6 billion, official data shows. The Islamic Republic of Iran has recently signed up to the Russia-led Eurasian Economic Union, EEU, which ensures the free movement of goods, services, and capital between member states.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witch hunt.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
Every night, more than 300,000 men, women, and children in the United States stay in homeless shelters. An additional 200,000 or so spend each night unsheltered, whether on the street or in other locations such as subway trains, vehicles, etc. Families with children represent 30% of the U.S. homeless population. More facts, rather gloomy facts, just tell us part of the story. The truth is that homelessness in America can't be explained in facts and figures. The toll that homelessness takes on individuals, families, communities, and society touches every aspect of Americans' lives.
Rent prices have continued to surge, and all while many do not have a fair living wage.
I'm scared I'm going to wake up or not wake up one morning. One minute they're here and before my eyes drop, like literally I've had somebody that I knew die right in front of me.
Rough sleepers. The statistics on the number of homeless youth in the U.S. fail to tell the whole story because so many young people don't fit the strict definition of homeless. For example, the Department of Housing and Urban Development defines homeless people as those who are living in shelters, in transitional housing, or outdoors. This definition fails to account for the many children and young adults who go from place to place, couch surfing with friends and relatives or paying for short stays at motels. In general, it is reported that almost 600,000 people are homeless in the United States. That's a staggering number for the world's largest economy. So the question is, what are the main roots of this problem?
The problem of homelessness in America has taken off over the last 20 years and become extreme in the last 10, I think the main cause is the domination of the American economy by multinational investment banks, which have bought up real estate in order to make fortunes and then stage these periodic every 8 to 10 year economic crises, which have forced people out of their houses or out of their apartments. And then once the houses are vacated, these investment banks then sell them back to people at a higher price when the economy comes back following their plan.
America's homelessness problem has the makings of an acute crisis. The origins of the current homelessness crisis go back decades, in fact, to policies that stopped the U.S. from building enough housing. According to the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, 7 million extremely low-income renters cannot get affordable homes.
Government has really collapsed. I mean, government had problems in the United States from a long time back, but there used to be things like rent control, controls on real estate that were meant to keep housing affordable.
There are many factors driving the menace of homelessness in America. Poverty, mental illness, addiction, and other issues do play their roles. But what is the main driving force behind the menace of homelessness in today's America?
It's a big question with a few aspects. Definitely to take a look at like investment firms such as BlackRock buying up single family homes all over the country. And it's not just BlackRock. I mean, but this makes it permanently expensive, artificially driving up the prices of homes for regular people. These billion-dollar corporations have much deeper pockets and can afford much higher prices than your average family, young couple just starting out. Another investment firm is Blackstone, and they bought like 17,000 family homes, single-family dwellings, just last year. The fact is these billion-dollar corporations are doing everything they can to squeeze every penny out of the housing market.
Homelessness has become a particularly bad political problem for the Democrats who govern big cities where it is most visible. The new Los Angeles mayor, Karen Bass, has declared a state of emergency over the homelessness crisis in the city. She says, we must have a single strategy bringing together government, the private sector, and other stakeholders. Many doubt that her approach could be successful.
Anytime someone talks about a partnership between government and the private sector, I think we're looking at a scam. Government should be opposed to or in partnership with citizens and communities. The private sector is not citizens and it's not the community, although it sounds like it might be. What it means is it means multinational corporations and banks. And these organizations, corporations, are essentially government, except unlike government, they're not transparent or accessible, and they're run for short-term profit. So what she's really talking about there is that the way to solve homelessness is to get corporations involved. But corporations have made a fortune by making people homeless. So it's not, in any sense, a solution.
In many big cities, homelessness has become criminalized. This is because big corporations in the housing market know that having homeless people wandering about a neighborhood is not good for the business.
The only possible solution to homelessness would be to get corporations and investment banks out of real estate, out of land, out of housing, and have housing for the people. The government to be a contract between people who are specialized administrators and the citizens, the local communities.
Business improvement districts, groups of commercial property owners who pool their resources to revitalize their neighborhoods, have worked with some city councils to make hostile architecture. This includes putting spikes on grates or sheltered sidewalks or having slanted benches or closely placed armrests that prevent lying down. In a nutshell, they just want to make life harder for homeless in the big cities.
It's one thing for like a family to buy a home and then, you know, fix it up and sell it while the market happens to be up. It's another thing altogether for billion-dollar corporations to engage in predatory lending that imposes costs on the rest of society, and the only beneficiary is them. That's predatory, that's parasitic, and unfortunately, it's what the entire U.S. elite has become, and the elite in many other Western, in every other Western country, as far as I'm concerned, a predatory class that provides no value to the rest of society.
Racial minorities experience homelessness at a disproportionate rate. For example, African Americans make up 13% of the general population, but 40% of the homeless population. Young Black people have also an 83% higher risk of becoming homeless than their white counterparts.
The reason why African Americans ended up in that particular situation is that they've been used as a sort of political football, that there was an effort by the far right and the corporations that back them in the politics to try and find some sort of an enemy that could be blamed for what is wrong in America, why wealth is concentrated, why it's so hard to get a job, why all of us are so poor. And they've come up basically with two fake enemies, which is African Americans, who are somehow a threat, and therefore, although working class whites are basically in the same position as African American working class people, somehow the African Americans are threatening to kill them or whatever, and therefore they should be locked up or they should be deprived from jobs. And this is an old strategy.
Now, of course, the U.S. media do cover stories and reports of homelessness, but the story has not become mainstream. Is it not that big a problem?
In general, the U.S. media has just become a PR firm for the deep state. I mean, I remember when I was 19 and they were enthusiastically selling the war on terror to not just the American population, but to that of all its allies. And it was disgusting at that time, and it's only gotten worse. It's only gotten more corrupt, more partisan, and at this point, they've dropped any pretense of objectivity or journalistic integrity. The job of the American media isn't to focus on issues that matter, it's to indoctrinate the masses. It's a propaganda tool used to distract gullible partisans of both parties, but particularly the Democrats.
The criminalization of homelessness is increasing as local governments find legal loopholes and replicate discriminatory policies, practices, and proposals from one place to the next. The corporate media sometimes exaggerate the problems caused by the homeless people and helps create more and more hostile architecture.
And to make them believe that pointless issues like January 6th, an event where some misguided folks took an impromptu tour of the U.S. Capitol building, that that's the real issue, instead of, you know, things that are happening that affect actual people. The American media will tell you that these shallow partisan issues or are the most pressing issues today, or they'll hyperventilate because some country like Russia or Qatar doesn't show proper reverence for homosexuality.
Another social menace facing the country is suicide. Official data show that both the number and the rate of suicides in the United States increased 4% from 2020 to 2021 after two consecutive years of decline. It is a sign, experts say, that suicide rates are inching back up to levels seen before the pandemic. Now, of course, factors like poverty and homelessness can have a role in the increase of the suicides. But what are the other factors?
I don't think that the increase in suicide and the abuse of drugs and medication is related to poverty per se or to homelessness, although obviously these affect it. It is a rather a consequence of a lack of hope and a sense of despair about American society, that people feel, especially young people, but across the board, that there's nothing you can do, that the whole system is so rigged up that there is no escape.
Despite the stresses associated with the pandemic, suicide rates did not increase in 2020. But a report by the Washington Post says suicides have been increasing steadily since 1999, going up 35% over two decades. 35% is simply too high. What should be done to tackle this social menace?
Well, it's really hard because, I mean, I'm not sure that there's anything that can be done, like, to be honest. I mean, obviously there are policies that could be implemented, but the problem is this is part, as I said previously, in my opinion, this is part of a historical process that I'm afraid will be forced to be played out because the changes that would be required would be so fundamental that it would require a complete restructuring not only of Western economies, but how the West sees itself and sees the world. I think America, for America, it needs to realize that it was a proposition nation, and proper nations aren't proposition nations. I mean, that's not what, like, fills people's lives with joy. I mean, that's not what human beings yearn for in our hearts. I mean, at the end of the day, being a little bit richer or a little bit poorer, that's not what matters in the human experience. Real nations are built on an appreciation for history, on a foundation of faith, built with strong families, who all share a common history and an ethnos and a way of being in the world and a rootedness that just doesn't exist in American society.
So it can be concluded that the 2021 increases may reflect in part a return to normalcy. A new report has found out that males aged 15 to 24 continue to be at higher risk than other groups committing suicides.
In the case of suicide, I would suggest, or for that matter, poverty, that the basic challenge is getting the economy and local society back in the hands of citizens, that people should own their own homes locally, that banks should be cooperatives run by local citizens, that we should grow our own food, have our own farms, have our own markets, and not have these multinational investment banks and corporations preying upon ordinary people.
Measuring suicide rates is uniquely challenging for a variety of reasons. For example, to know that a death was due to suicide requires some certainty about intent, which is often not easy to confirm. Researchers emphasize that the reported rates are likely an undercount of the true suicide toll for all the groups.
That the contemporary West is facing is community life has completely eroded. I mean, over the last 300 years, Western civilization has completely rejected religion and proceeded to destroy institutions and social institutions and traditions. I mean, we've exalted money above all else and embraced cultural nihilism. If you look around, Western countries have become completely narcissistic. And this is a very, very deep problem. And it's not one that started yesterday. In my opinion, it's part of a historical process and is actually the fruits of American ideology and American liberalism.
the suicide morality is the second and third leading cause of death for Black and Hispanic populations, respectively, compared to the ninth leading cause of death for whites. While research gaps remain, current data also indicates that suicide morality affects incarcerated people at far higher rates than the national average, and the toll is also growing among military members. The political debate in the United States seems to be in state of partisan deadlock. How much does this political rivalry push up the social crises mentioned earlier?
The Republican Party would appeal to those who want to be independent of government, which is a good thing if you have a corrupt, predatory government. But the Republicans offer as an alternative, not organizing the community, but rather appealing or using multinational corporations, privatization of government functions, not empowering citizens. In the case of the Democrats, they're basically playing the same game, but what they use is cultural identity games.
I don't think American or any other political elites are going to accomplish anything. I think we're just going to see more and more deadlock. And the fact is American elites don't care about their people. They just don't. And so what we're seeing right now is an empire in decline. And I think mostly, other than a few renegade politicians, we're looking at politicians who are in the raid, the treasury stage of imperial decline. So the idea that the politicians are like going to solve these issues, it is fantasy.
The pursuit of happiness is the most famous phrase in the Declaration of Independence. It is attributed to Founding Father Thomas Jefferson, who borrowed it from political philosopher John Locke. Jefferson edited out Locke's right to property and replaced it with the pursuit of happiness. But if you look at the number of homeless and suicides in America, you understand that phrase, whatever the version, has been a false promise to many Americans.
Peace, and welcome back to Power to the People. On today's segment, we are going to take a look at homelessness, or as we call it here, houselessness in the United States. Despite America being a so-called first world country, as well as one of the most technologically advanced nations in the world, there are nearly 600,000 people who live on the streets, and the vast amount of people living in the streets are Black. It's estimated that 40% of people nationwide who are homeless are Black, despite Black people making up 13% of America's population. And it's also estimated that 50% of homeless families in the United States are Black as well. We as Black people, we were literally enslaved in this country and forced to build it up, yet we make up nearly half of the country's homeless population. And one of the major forces that has put Black people onto the streets is gentrification. Gentrification is the systematic removal of Black people from Black neighborhoods, and it makes way for these new white settlers to move in. These white settlers, they move into Black neighborhoods, they buy up the property, they redevelop it, which increases the value of properties, and then it makes these neighborhoods largely unaffordable. The government, they also use policies like eminent domain to take Black people's properties and kick them out. If this ain't settler colonialism, I don't know what is. This has led to cities like Oakland, California, that were once almost 50% Black, to having the Black population decrease to just a bit over 20%. And while many will blame homelessness solely on drugs and mental health issues, the root of the problem is white supremacist settler colonialism that uses the inhumane economic system of capitalism all for the settlers' gain. This racist, capitalist system, it produces a society where 600,000 people are living on the streets, yet there's over 16 million housing units in the U.S. that are empty. Yet these politicians, they will say they need to build more housing. And this exposes the parasitic nature of capitalism. Capitalism creates homelessness to create a fake demand for housing, and this allows corporations to build more housing that isn't even built for houseless people. This allows these corporations to make billions upon billions of dollars off of fake demand for more housing. And these same companies, they also control the market and will crash the market on purpose and then buy it all up. For example, in 2021, investors bought a quarter of the homes sold and used their control of the market to drive up rents. This skyrocketing rate of rent, all during a deadly pandemic, led to more people being on the streets. If we look at the state of California, a so-called liberal and progressive state that has a multi-billion dollar surplus in its reserves, 29% of homes bought were by corporations in 2021. This led to California's homeless population growing by over 22,000 people, and all of this was in the middle of a pandemic. In California, it refuses to house its houseless population, and instead, it keeps properties vacant. This shows that it's truly a political and economic decision to keep people on the street. But this is America for what it is. It values profit over human life. And thousands upon thousands of houseless people die in the streets every single year. And it's estimated that 20 houseless people die every single day in the streets of America. So we must fight this inhumane system. We must fight to build an egalitarian society with communal ways of living. Because in no world should a nation be able to have millions of abandoned housing, yet hundreds of thousands of people are sleeping on the streets every single night. This is violence. This is power to the people.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to our weekly episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. A fortnight ago, we completed explanation of Surah Munafiqun, and this Friday, we embark on explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Taqabun, which is number 64 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Medina, it has 18 ayahs and takes its name from the word Yaum At-Taghabun in ayah 9, which means the day of mutual loss and gain, and refers to the day of resurrection and judgment as the day of disposition, since on that day, everyone will try to save oneself and put the blame on others. For those who abandon faith and choose to disbelieve shall lose paradise and be thrown into hellfire, cheated forever from felicity by their own souls and their leaders. Those who believe shall gain paradise against all the attempts of the unbelievers to distract them in the world from faith and goodness, because of their guidance by God and His messengers to steer away from hellfire. The surah opens with a description of God's majesty, power, wisdom, and knowledge. It reminds the disbelievers of the miserable end of those who disbelieved before them, and decisively refutes their denial of the resurrection. The surah urges the believers to be wary but forgiving of the enemies they may have within their own families, and inspires them to remain steadfast and to spend in God's cause. According to a narration from the Prophet's 16th infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, whoever recites Surah Taghabun in the ritual prayer as a part of religious obligations or on other occasions will be amongst the people of paradise on the day of resurrection, depending on fulfillment of Quranic and Islamic injunctions. Now, we invite you to listen to the opening two ayahs of the surah. Stay tuned, please.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يسبح لله ما في السماوات وما في الأرض له الملك وله الحمد وهو على كل شيء قدير هو الذي خلقكم فمنكم كافر ومنكم مؤمن والله بما تعملون بصير.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Whatever there is in the heavens and whatever there is in the earth, glorify Allah. To Him belongs all sovereignty and to Him belongs all praise. And He has power over all things. It is He who created you. Then some of you are faithless, and some of you are faithful. And Allah sees best what you do. This surah, like some other ones, begins with glorification and praise of the one and only creator of the universe, to whom belongs all praise and power, who is glorified by each and everything. In other words, He is the sovereign glorified by all the world of existence, and He never wrongs anyone. However, it is unfortunate that some people, failing to worship and glorify God Almighty, commit sins and indulge in disbelief. Ayah 2 means to say that God has granted the human race the freedom of will an expression, which stem from the gifts of intellect and the power of speech, in order to differentiate good from evil and act accordingly. This ayah negates the flawed concept of predestination by focusing on faith and disbelief, through which stems a person's words and deeds. Allah is fully aware of what we do. These ayahs teach us that, number one, the entire creation, including animals, plants, and even inanimate objects, possess understanding, and thus they glorify the Almighty Creator. Number two, ingratitude and disbelief are the result of inadequate cognizance of God, or the complete lack of it. Number three, the Almighty Creator has power over all and everything. And number four, God has granted human beings the freedom to differentiate between right and wrong, and thus the consequences of their words and actions rest upon them. Let us listen to ayahs 3 and 4 of the same surah.
خلق السماوات والأرض بالحق وصوركم فأحسن صوركم وإليه المصير يعلم ما في السماوات والأرض ويعلم ما تسرون وما تعلنون والله عليم بذات الصدور.
He created the heavens and the earth with reason, and He formed you and perfected your forms, and toward Him is the destination. He knows whatever there is in the heavens and the earth, and He knows whatever you hide and whatever you disclose, and Allah knows best what is in the breast. These two ayahs further elaborate the purpose of creation of the universe, which is based on reason and is proceeding towards the single goal of the boundless being, that is, the infinite existence of God, as could be reflected by the forms given to us with the objective of achieving perfection. The creation of human beings as the best of creation inspires us to proceed from the realm of the horizons and enter that of the souls, saying that God fashioned us with pleasing shapes, pleasant appearances, and an embellished heart enlightened by reason and wisdom. As Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the vicegerent of the Prophet of Islam, says in one of his sermons that God Almighty created specimens from the entire world of existence in the human beings, which means macrocosms is epitomized in microcosm. In other words, a brief glimpse at the creation of our body and soul reflects that the human being is the most beauteous of all the creatures in the world of existence, and God created this being in the best form, and the Almighty Creator's omnipotence is manifest therein. Ayah 3 closes by saying that the final return of all things is toward God Almighty. Man is a constituent element of the organic world of existence. The best means to abstain from committing sins and maintaining the fear of God Almighty is the concept of His omniscience and the fact that our beloved Creator is fully aware of all our deeds. He is all aware of all that is manifest and hidden throughout the heavens and on the earth, even in our hearts and minds. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the creation of the universe is not haphazard and unplanned, but rather in accordance with a specific aim. Number two, everything moves towards the boundless being of the Almighty Creator and encompassed by His infinite power. Number three, God is aware of our secret deeds and hidden intentions and motives. And number four, it is proper cognizance of God that prevents us from committing sins and inspires us to do good deeds. On this note, we conclude this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullah Aliha. I saw that, for example, if we place 10 lines of Imam Hussein's supplication for the day of Arafah, or supplication 47 of Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah next to those supplications, we will see these 10 lines have more content and greater spirit than all those supplications have together. Well, these emotional states have also aided the country in sensitive times. One being during the Holy Defense. During the Holy Defense, it was the elegists, the poets, these good poets who were truly able to prepare the atmosphere for the great epic event. I have read this verse of a poem many times in this regard. We warm the lovers with the sharpness of our words. We strike the butterfly like the flame of a candle does. This describes your situation. We strike the butterfly like the flame of a candle does. Elegies played a great role in preparing the hearts and increasing the spirituality of the environment. When sending the members of the Basij and others to the front lines, on the nights of military operations, during the military drills, at dawn, during the burial and funeral processions of the martyrs and the mosques and in Husseiniyahs on the battlefield and everywhere else.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The holiness that was prevalent in the regions where the Holy Defense was going on was unprecedented. and has never occurred anywhere in the world at any time in history, apart from the early days of Islam. A major part of it was related to the elegies, and another part of it was related to other factors. It has been the same in the years after the war and up until today. Elegies have played a great role in various situations. During the sedition in 1388, that is, 2009, on the 9th of day of that year, and on various other occasions. I'm repeating these things for you so that as elegists, you can understand your position, what you're doing and what you're capable of doing. This is my intention, thank God. There are many of you as well. When we used to have these meetings in the beginning, only about 100 or 200 people would attend. Today, there are thousands of people across the country who are engaged in the work of reciting elegies and are mastering various techniques for attracting their audiences. This is a great phenomenon that is taking place in the country, and we need to take advantage of it.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
A new survey has found that 1 in 4 Europeans have trouble heating their home. According to this survey, more than a quarter of Europeans are experiencing problems heating their homes and paying debts for housing and utilities. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, more than a quarter of Europeans are experiencing problems heating their homes and paying debts for housing and utilities. The Hungarian media reported recently, citing a survey by the Sedovec think tank. According to the survey, dubbed Europroject, 26% of the sample, representing roughly 100 million people, are unable to properly heat their homes. Greeks appear to be the worst affected, with 56% of the population facing difficulties with heating. In Portugal and France, 34% of residents describe the same problems. Finland, Hungary, Austria, and Denmark were the least affected, with less than 15% of residents admitting to difficulties. Every fourth respondent in the survey said they were unable to pay their heating bill at least once during the past year. That figure was also the highest in Greece, with 51% of the population affected, followed by Cyprus with 37%, Ireland and Bulgaria with 35% each. The respondents blamed inflation for their problems, as rising prices on everything from energy to food impact their ability to pay bills. According to the survey, heating bills have become far less affordable than in 2021. The authors noted that in 2021, based on data from Europe's official statistics agency Eurostat, only 6.9% of European households, some 29.9 million people, were unable to adequately heat their homes, and 6.4% struggled with paying bills. The survey was conducted among 38,000 randomly selected European adults between October 13th and December 7th, 2022. The research covered the EU, UK, Norway, Switzerland, Moldova, Albania, Kosovo, North Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Meanwhile, Guardian reported more than 700,000 people in England and Wales are living in homes without central heating this winter, 1 in 10 of whom are elderly and ill, according to figures that lay bare the plight of the most vulnerable. The new official data highlights the extreme end of the conditions being suffered by those who live in 4-meter homes, the government rates as non-decent for failing to meet basic standards. With the country enduring its chilliest month, charities lobbying for the rights of elderly people have warned that cold homes could cause 10,000 unnecessary deaths this winter. A government spokesperson, when approached for comment, described the lack of central heating in homes as completely unacceptable, but ministers stand accused of failing those living in the worst conditions. Office for National Statistics ONS analysis based on the 2021 census shows that 699,500 people live in a home without central heating in England. London has the largest number of households without central heating, 76,190, followed by the rest of Southeast, 49,875, the Southwest, 42,550, and the Northwest, 47,710. There are a further 15,496 homes in Wales without central heating. Confirmed figures are due to be released from 2021 census recently. The ONS further reports that among those living without central heating in England, 68,100 are aged 65 and over with long-term health conditions. A central heating system provides warmth to a number of spaces within a building from one main source of heat, typically a gas boiler in the UK. Holly Holder, the Deputy Director for Homes at the Centre for Ageing Better, said the number of homes without central heating in England is truly shocking. We have among the worst and least efficient homes in Western Europe, and often it is older people who have to reside in these subpar properties. The life and death and implications of this are really being seen now as we enter the bracing cold of midwinter at the height of a cost of living crisis, she added. The consequences of such a poor standard of housing are deadly. Cold homes kill. The UK has a high excess winter mortality, far greater than in much colder European countries such as Norway, where properties are better insulated.